Welcome in. I'm Nate Herron, sitting in for Randy Miller today, and we are rejoined by two guests, friends of the program and friends of veterans and military members and their families. We've got Matt Eversman and James Patterson. Welcome back to the show, fellas.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
It's a pleasure. Good to be back.
An honor. Totally.
This is a fun thing with one of our partners, Wounded Warrior Project, who you guys have had an active role in helping out veterans through various means. Matt, of course, we've talked about him. You know, Josh Hartnett, that played him in Black Hawk Down. Is that who you wanted to play you in Black Hawk Down, or did you really have any sort of say in that matter?
I had zero say in it, but my wife was very thrilled that they chose him.
Yeah, Matt, James, your wife would be very thrilled if she chose him.
That's exactly right.
Jim, if we have a movie with you in it, who's playing?
Go down a big rabbit hole there,
but me.
Who's playing Patterson in the Jim Patterson movie?
No, this is a movie that will never be made. Documentary. I don't know. Yeah, who's what the hell is it? Clooney? George Clooney. Yeah, perfect.
There we go. There we go. Well, you know, the Wounded Warrior Project has been you know, exemplary and, you know, really cutting edge in their helping of those who have been injured in combat, whether it's physical or mental. And there's a lot of different ways that sort of healing process can take place. And what we're going to focus on today, you know, you've got all sorts of experimental medicinal therapies and homeopathic, you got equine therapy, but we're going to talk today about the power of putting word to the page and writing. And, yeah, you know, Matt and James have put together, four books now between the two of you? Is that correct?
Well, I've lost track, Matt. It's about right. We have two in the hopper here. So yeah. I think four and two that we're messing around with right now.
Well, of course, Walk in My Combat Boots, then Walk My Rounds with Me about the ER Nurses, Walk the Blue Line, and The Secret Lives of Booksellers and Librarians. You can get those wherever books are sold.
And actually, The Librarians, that one's coming out next year. So you
made a little mistake. Bit of that one. Well, jumped the gun on that one, I suppose. But didn't I see that, Jim, you've sold over 100 million copies of books at this point?
Yeah, it's some obnoxious number. Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. Yeah, I think it's closer to 500 million, believe it or not. Not to pat myself on the shoulder too hard here. Yeah,
I want to dislocate.
Way too many. Yeah, write too many books, and I've sold too many books. But hopefully, we'll continue.
If there's anything you guys want to get out before we tell, we have some veterans. We're going to make this part of a roundtable discussion again. We've been doing this here on the program.
Well, I think the really important thing is anybody who's listening, whether you have an interest in writing or just in reading, hopefully it'll be interesting to you in terms of how it all works or how it doesn't work or how it can be useful in your life. Well, yeah, once again, whether it's writing or reading, I think it works both ways. So that'll be good.
Anything you want to share about the upcoming release that you guys have working together? Do you guys ever meet in person when you do these, or is it all done kind of remote? How's that process work?
Matt, how does it work? It doesn't work, but I mean, how do we screw up?
We slug through it. And I will say this in all honesty, the process, not to be a cheesy weasel here, but working with Jim is very easy. It really, truly is. And I think our process by design is very simple. You know, soldiers know this, keep it simple, stupid. And we definitely do that. And, you know, I do the interviews and gather the information, sort of start the beginnings of the story, then bring it over to Jim's house. And he starts to craft it and work his magic from there. I mean, it's literally a process that's worked four times straight. And certainly allows me to learn a lot. I get a front row seat, you know, at a master class.
But, you know, it's also a piece of the writing is actually the interviews and preparing for the interviews, figuring out, you know, which Matt is doing. I do a little of it, but Matt does most of it. And deciding what the tone of the book needs to be, what the pitfalls are, what are the, you know, obviously the first one, Walking in Combat Boots, that was, we were kind of, you know, feeling our way there, I think. And the useful thing there was obviously, you know, Matt had been in combat and a lot of the people that were interviewed knew him or knew of him. So that was a good thing. And then switching around to ER nurses, that's a whole nother thing in terms of earning their trust, getting them to be able to talk to you, get, you know, one of the issues always in all of the books, which Matt is well aware of, is a lot of the people will go, well, why would you want to talk to me? I don't have anything interesting to say. Mm-hmm. And that couldn't be farther from the truth, because in almost all cases, it was a little different, certainly with the librarians and booksellers, because, you know, they don't go into combat that much. But still, you know, once again, in another kind of challenge.
Isn't that amazing, though, with military service members, how they'll say, you know, why do you want to talk to me? And then you finally kind of crack that door open, and the stories they have are. So I was talking before we got on the air. I'm the PA announcer out of Arrowhead. We had a World War II veteran yesterday who we honored in between quarters. And he was a radar man on the USS Macomb, I believe. And he was like, kind of didn't really want to say a whole lot. And then it turns out, you know, he survived, you know, submarine chase, a kamikaze attack. They were sweeping, you know, Tokyo Harbor before the Japanese surrender. It's like, this stuff is fascinating. Are the military, between the military folks, law enforcement, and the nurses, which was the most difficult kind of group?
The scariest were the nurses, I think. No, I'm not kidding. You laugh, but I mean, and it is humorous in a way. Matt, go ahead about the nurses.
Jim, you're right. Listen, they all share great commonalities in their DNA of selfless service and, you know, commitment to our local communities. But those nurses, I mean, they see us all on our worst days, and they do it day in, day out. There is no doubt that any shift in any ER anywhere in the world, it's going to be something ugly happening, guaranteed, and they're doing it day in, day out. It makes your heart – it would make my heart rate go up. I would finish – we joke about it like Jim just said, but, you know, I'd go out and I'd have to tell my wife – you know, sometimes you're in tears. Sometimes you're like, I just need a drink because I can't believe the story that he or she just told me. They
never stop. As Matt says, it's day after day, but it's also minute after minute, because they pull back a curtain and this guy's lost his hand, and they pull back the curtain and this person is having a heart attack, or, you know, it's just, it goes on and on and on. And it's amazing. You talk about PTSD. I mean, it's just an amazing occupation. And, you know, I think in the military, they're doing a better job about recognizing some of the stress, the PTSD, but not so much in nursing yet. They still haven't gotten there. Or with the police, same thing. Not as much with the police either.
Well, and that's one of the things we've seen with Wounded Warrior Project and some of these new ideas in dealing with PTS. And they're not just helping out veterans. They're also helping out folks in other avenues. So, but we want to focus again with the veterans. The first gentleman we're going to bring in is looking to do a little bit of writing. Sergio Alfaro, an Army veteran who served in Iraq. Welcome, Sergio.
Hey, Sergio. Thank you,
Nate. I'm just going to open the floor up to you. You got two guys that have got way more experience than I'll ever dream of having. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your service, and a little bit of your background and how you want to kind of pivot and maybe use writing to express yourself.
Sure. Well, just to give you a little bit about my background. I'm 40 years of age right now. I actually was a medic in the U.S. Army for 4.5 years. So they stopped blast me. I count those extra 6 months. I did my time. So I'm going to count every little bit of it. I did get deployed out to Iraq from 2003 to 2004. And I even did a year in the Air Force National Guard. I wanted to see how well the other side was living. And I got to say, the Air Force has it pretty nice. But moving on from there, ever since then, you know, I always thought after being a medic that I was going to be a doctor. I thought, you know what, being a physician is my life. That's my what I was brought into this world to do. And I actually found out that, no, that wasn't going to be the case. I got over to Harvard Medical School. Unfortunately, things didn't work out. My PTSD got too severely activated. And as much as I love patients and taking care of patients and learning about medicine, I unfortunately had to take a step back and focus on myself, on my therapy and getting better. And that's where Wounded Warrior Project, with their Warrior Care Network and so many other programs, helped me be able to get to where I am right now, which is in a much more stable place, having a wife, having a home, and, well, at least being able to see that I have so many blessings in my life. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now.
What kind of writing are you trying to do, or are you doing?
Right now, I'm trying to kind of share the story of what I've been through in the past couple of decades in regards to both my military time, even the traumatic events, because as much as it hurts and pains me to, you know, open up and share those things, I feel like it's worthwhile, not just for myself, but for other people to hear kind of some of the different things that happen in war. And I do it not so much for myself, but I do it because I'm hopeful that if other people hear this, it's going to resonate with them and they'll be able to share their own stories, because I think that's something that we all share in as humanity, is that there's a lot of different pains in our lives that we keep to ourselves. And in part, maybe it's because it helps us to live day to day, but also in part because, you know what, we don't want to burden other people with our stuff, you know, and I think that's kind of a false way of looking at it. So that's kind of the writing I want to do, is one, to kind of do it selfishly, I guess, for myself, to, you know, really make concrete what I've been through in my life, but then also to move on from there and hopefully get other people to talk about and share what's going on in their lives with either those they trust or with other people in public at large. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do.
If I could just jump in, Jim, for a second, and I would just throw in, Sergio, just sort of a shot across the bow from the conversation we just had a minute ago. I can tell you, having interviewed, you know, Jim, I don't even know the number of interviews we're up to now, but I mean, hundreds, call it hundreds, I mean, 500-600 interviews.
Several hundred, yeah.
You know, from the soldiers in walking my combat boots, sharing their stories, very personal stories about combat trauma, you know, life after their ups and downs, highs and lows. You know, I would get these, you know, the nurses would talk about, hey, I read your book, and they would share their stories. And the more fluid they came out, you know, and then these cops were doing it. And my point is, I don't think you should, for what it's worth, hesitate for a second to share your story, because it's pretty empirical that readers, it will be a ringing the bell for the readers that are going to say, like, as Jim always says, like, I know exactly what you're talking about. And forget about it. You're not being selfish. Just do it, man. It will benefit others, guaranteed.
Yeah. Let me just a quick thing on the audiences. And the first audience is you. I'm really tight. That's because you're going to do this, and it's going to help you. and you're going to get satisfaction out of it. Yeah. The second audience is your own family, because a lot of times, and this has been true in all the books that we've done, and you know this, but whether it's cops or combat or even the nurses, they have trouble sharing this stuff with their families because they just don't understand, or you don't want to burden. You said burden people, yes, with it. So that's another audience. You know, as you get a little wider into it, a third audience are people who have gone through this themselves. And we did find with combat boots that, there was a lot of that in terms of, you know, one of my best friends from high school who was in Vietnam, and he called me after he read the book, and he said, I got together with half a dozen of my friends from Vietnam, and we all read and talked about the book. And then we started talking about what had happened, you know, over there. So that's another group. And then, you know, obviously the much larger audience, which is, you know, if you have a story that is compelling enough, and you can write well enough, and you're lucky enough to find a publisher. So that's its own thing, too. And that's just, you know, that's obviously, that's difficult. And part of it is luck. And part of it is, you know, whether that's a skill set that you have. I mean, who knows? It's always. One of the things that was amazing to me in reading all these interviews and doing some of them is how articulate the combat people are. And we're running into it now. We're doing another book with combat oriented. And I can't believe how articulate these people, men and women, are telling their stories. It's just much more than teachers or a lot of the people that we're talking to. I mean, they know it. They got it. Their language is good. The storytelling is good. One of the things that you might want to think about in terms of doing it, well, for starters, as Matt knows, I always insist on outlines. You don't have to, but man, does it save you a lot of time if you can figure out what is this that you're going to communicate to some people, okay? What's that? What is the communication? What is the, if I could tell people in a couple of sentences why they would want to read this, you know, what is that? What is that? What is the mission here? Why should I want to, you know, I mean, you've had some experiences. A lot of people had experiences. Why do I want to read about your experiences? Because I got my own things that I have to do. An outline where you kind of begin to, you know what the mission's going to be, you know what the, and then lay it out as an outline in terms of, or try to. And I don't do anything where I don't spend a month or more trying to do an outline. Or in the case of the interviews, even there, Matt and I talked a lot about, okay, what's the shape of this thing going to be? And one of the things, the early decisions that we made was that this thing can't just be interviews. Because nobody wants to read 40-page interviews. Well, and most people don't. And then B, if it's not going to be interviews, what are we going to do with the interviews to make them compelling? And the decision that we came to is that in each, whether it's a combat veteran or a nurse or whatever, you're going to come upon this person, and the chapters are going to tend to be 5 to 8 pages or so. You know, you don't have to. It could be 10, could be 4. It doesn't really matter. But in those pages, you're going to get a feeling for that individual. You're going to get to know them just enough so that you're interested and you care. And then we're going to let them tell a couple of stories. The second, or no, whatever number I'm at to, up to now, the thing to think about in terms of this kind of book is consider telling it as nothing but stories. The story after story after story after story. People like stories. Even if you're giving speeches, I don't know what Matt does, but the less you can just, you know, sit there, blah, 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 who cares? Give me a story, you know, and catch my attention. A lot of times I'll start and I'll get the introduction, Patterson sold whatever the hell he sold, and then I'll stand up and the first thing he says, "Hi, I'm Stephen King." and it opens it up. It lets people know that humor is going to, it's allowed. Don't take this that seriously. Just because it's a writer, who cares? So we're going to have some fun. But that sets the tone for what we're going to do. I'm not saying be funny, but you want to get people in immediately, and just story after story after story after story after story. And that's certainly what we put in our books, which is, you know, what we're the stories and the mission that Matt and I always had, and it's true for every book, was that at the end, let's say with Walking My Combat Boots, at the end, our mission was, if you've been in combat and you read the book, you will say Eversman and Patterson got it right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how could we not? Because we're dealing with the information we have is what they're telling us. So how could we not get it right? We're not making shit up here. Yeah. Maybe they are, but, you know, no, but I mean, so that's a piece of it. And the second piece is that if you're one of these people that thinks you know something and BS about it, you didn't understand. You don't. And that's the most important thing. And that's the hardest thing in terms of getting readers in. People who think they know what the military is, maybe reject it and don't have a clue. Or people who think they know, let's defund the police. Well, before you come to that point of view, maybe you need to understand what the hell the police do and what the problems are and what the effect that's going to be on the neighborhoods as opposed to wherever the hell you're coming from, which tends not to be the neighborhoods. And do the people in the neighborhoods, do they want better police forces? Yes. Do they want less police? No. but understanding. So, you know, in your case, I don't think much is written on medics and that side of it are certainly not published. So, you know, there could be something there. And how do you tell that story? I had a friend of mine did a book. It was on as a college student. He worked at an emergency medical I'm one of those in Long Island. And he just told story after story after story after story. And by the end of the book, one, and he was a good writer. He was, he could be humorous at times and sometimes incredibly tragic. It's a very tough job. And you read it and you understood it. Yeah. You got it for the first time. You say, oh, okay, I don't want that job, but now we know what it is. But, yeah. You know, like that.
Well, you know, the use of humor, even Matt's experience, you know, in Mogadishu, there's elements of humor to it. I mean, whether it's gallows humor or it's something else, it's Sergio, are you looking to write purely biographical material, your nonfiction, fiction? Like, what sort of material are you looking to write?
I guess it's leaning, at least right now, the way I'm imagining it. And James, I'm so happy you brought up outlining, because that's exactly the first thing I did. I think there's still much more outlining that needs to be done, especially after you said like a month or two of outlining for a book. That just kind of blew my mind. But more biographical and more kind of the lessons I learned along the way. But I also see the importance of like storytelling, like, you know, don't tell people what to do. James, this is what you're reinforcing for me, you know, put it into a story. I mean, this is where I guess you kind of get into the powerful stories of parables, of how you can bring parables into kind of life for people and being able to allow them to use that as a reflection for themselves to see what's going on in their own lives and hopefully do better for themselves and for those that they care about. So I've gotten so much good stuff. I try to write as fast as I could, James. Hopefully I caught a lot of it. If I didn't, I'm sure I'm going to have to listen to this podcast.
Yeah, one thing about the outline, Sergio, And they are not everybody uses them. James Joyce, not a big outliner. Might have been able to use it for Ulysses, but he didn't. Finnegan's Wake might have done better with an outline. At any rate, but one of the things with the outlines is just keep putting it down and don't get stuck. You just put a note, TBD, coming. That's how you get writers. You know, you when you get stuck, go on to the next piece of the outline and just put it all down. Then take the whole thing out again and do it again and do it again and do it again. When I say working on it a month, I might write the damn thing 7 or 8 times, but I don't get stuck. Oh. I don't get stuck. I just go to the next thing. Getting stuck, and by the way, around the third time, if you still can't get that, just cut it the hell out of there. I won't put that part in there because if I can't figure out even in an outline, then, you know, I'm probably not going to be able to fill pages on it. And just, you know, go past it, do something else.
So, Jim, you mentioned a little bit ago, you know, no one wants to read a 40-page story or statement on something that happened.
Well, they don't want to read an interview.
Right, or an interview. What?
Mostly.
What is...
Because Matt's in the damn interviews.
You've got a leg in both...
Nobody wants that.
You got a leg in both fiction and nonfiction. Which is harder to edit? Which is harder to get to distill down to where you want the final product to get to?
In terms of an outline?
Just in terms of fiction versus, you know, nonfiction, a documentary or interview style.
For me... And I've done a lot of nonfiction. I've done a lot of fiction. Fiction fits my skill set better because my biggest talent is imagination and solving problems. So that, you know, with nonfiction, it's like I remember writing about King Tut, a little book, and I got into it. I didn't want the little fucker to die, you know. But you can't do that because it's nonfiction. You can't, like, I can't let him live. But in a novel, I can. So I can do whatever I want to do. So the novel fits my talents because big imagination. But I like to keep things moving. Nonfiction, you know, not as much fun for me. And it needs to be something where I'm actually starting now to do the murders in Idaho. But once again, there it is. And there, once again, in terms of the content there, so much of it is research. You got to go out and meet everybody. You got to figure out ways to talk to the families, which is, and you have to make a decision too. Is this going to be one of those books where you're going to, at the end of it, go, oh, you know, he was a killer, but, you know, he had problems, or you're going to really talk about the tragedies of these four kids and what it did to their families and what it did to that town and what it's still doing to, and what's the effect of in a small town when something that's never happened, nothing like that had ever happened there before. So what's the effect of that? And what's the effect on the police department? They're not used to stuff like that. They've never dealt with it. And dealing with the press, and the press are suddenly everywhere. And then you got small town attorneys, and they're dealing, they're way over their heads, or they could be. So these are all things that come into it. And you start, once again, the outline, you're just taking these pieces. And if you make the decision, and I think the decision is, we want this to be more than anything else about the tragedy of the loss of life for these four kids and the effect of this whole thing on the town versus, you know, like with Filthy Rich, with which I wrote about Epstein, there it dealt with him a lot more because there were so many just head-scratching things about this guy. How the hell did he do this? Why would he do it? What kind of a nutcase was he? How did he get away with it? I mean, get away in terms of, you know, he got 11, 12 months in jail, things like that. So part of that's that. And part of, you know, your story is, okay, what's the real, what's the guts of it? What's the, and ultimately, what are the stories you want to tell? You don't have to, but I mean, I think it's easier to do that. And whatever that, look, this guy sent me this book yesterday, which is kind of interesting. And it's a whole nother area in terms of people listening or whatever. And this is a collection of his life stories. And there's some outfit called Storyworth. And what they do is, he's a grandfather. So he wanted to put this together to give to his grandkids. He wanted to, but he tells 110 pages, whatever it is, of stories. And he wanted his grandkids to know that. I know some people who have done where they put together a videotape, because they want their kids or their grandkids to kind of know who they were, who they are, what they're, you know. But that's another kind of writing and storytelling. And it can be as simple as, for some people, I'm not saying for you, Sergio, but for some people, where they're just going to turn the phone on themselves every day for half an hour and just eventually put all that stuff together. And this is my story. And that can be good for the kids, or, you know, the veterans. Who just want to put it all down and I don't know how, you know, I don't know enough about in terms of how you could edit that, but you want to decide, you want to be open when you're putting it down, but not necessarily going to share all of it, you know. Yeah. And it could be written, it could be doing it on your phone.
And my one question that's coming up right now, especially as you're bringing it up, James, is just how did you get over that first hurdle, like your very first book? When you wrote your first book, like, how did you know that you were going to have something that other people would even want to read? I mean,
well, I didn't. Like, but in the mornings when I get up, I would burn my hand over the stove until that, you know, you don't. And somebody said you're lucky if you find something you like to do. And then it's a miracle of somebody if you get the opportunity, somebody will pay you to do it. And you just don't. You don't know. My first book got turned down by 31 publishers. Rejection is, it then won an Edgar as the best first mystery. So go figure that out.
Yeah.
So here's 31 people like putting a freaking dagger in my heart.
Yeah.
And this is a book that, you know, other people thought was good enough to be the best first mystery of that year. I don't know if it was or it wasn't, but you know, you had all that rejection to deal with. And that was interesting and hard and whatever. And rewriting is a key thing. But storytelling, I'll tell you, it's a lot easier, man. I walked into the room. I had a couple of beers. I sat down with, you know, stories come a lot easier. And they're easier to edit and mess around and turn around. When you start, you know, pretending like you're writing for The New Yorker or something and just prose, that's hard stuff. And maybe you may have a skill at it, but that's hard.
So with publishing, you mentioned, you know, the book you just showed us, you know, the barrier to entry for someone to have their work published, either bound and just something that they can physically hold in their hand versus...
Now, these days, you can do it online.
That's true.
Can get on, you know, and you can publish online. You can publish, you know, you may or may... I have one friend who, incredibly successful, very lucky. I'd written a couple of books with him. And then he did one online. He couldn't get it published. It turned out, and it sold over a million copies online. I mean, right. That's very rare, but it happens. And now with some of these romantic Hoover and those women, relatively young women. I'm not putting them down. It's absolutely fine. But several of the ones that have sold like crazy were not published. They self-published them online. I don't know how that went from TikTok, but somehow and onto TikTok, and a couple of people said, this is the best thing I've read in my, and all of a sudden, a lot of people are reading it. So that's another outlet. And that wasn't available, you know, when I started that online thing. And it just depends. I mean, sometimes it's enough. You put it out there and 100 people read it and you like what it is. And it was satisfying for you to do it. And it helped to whatever, get you through the day.
Well, if we're looking at writing as a therapeutic value versus maybe a lifestyle value, maybe
it hasn't helped me in the therapy part.
Matt, this might be something you could speak to as well.
It hasn't helped any other.
Would you, if we've got, Sergio, obviously, we thank you for your service and, it's unfortunate, your PTS and those are things that you've had to deal with. And it sounds like things are trending in the right direction. Would Jim or Matt, would you recommend to a veteran or someone who's using writing as a therapeutic outlet to maybe you think twice before you try to go out and publish? Maybe you don't want to be turned down 31 times and have that dagger stuck in your heart. Or is discretion not the better part of valor on that sort of topic?
We can't give advice on it, honestly. People have got to find their own way when you get to that. And probably if you get to the point where you're thinking about publishing, you think it's pretty good. And you probably have had a few people read it. I think it's useful if you can find three or four people who are going to tell you the truth in a nice way. I did an autobiography, and I did have half a dozen people, including my wife and my son. And they had some thoughts that were helpful and being open to helpful suggestions.
Nothing like writing an autobiography and someone says, I have notes.
Right. That's right.
Sergio, do you have any other questions? We've got one more veteran I believe we're going to try to bring on, but don't want to cut you off if you had any other burning questions that you wanted to ask Matt or Jim here.
Honestly, no, not right now. You've given me so much to think about. I got to read through my notes again after this. And it's given me a head start. I feel like
don't get blockaded down. The best thing that I can tell you is the notion of considering writing stories, even if it's a 500-page book, rather than trying to write prose, which I don't know how to really explain that, but that's hard. Charles Dickens.
Well, thanks a lot for your time, Sergio.
Thank you, Sergio.
Next up, we're going to bring in Rob Lewis from Wounded Warrior Project. Bring him on. Rob, how you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you for taking the time to do this. It's really great for our veteran population to hear about these opportunities and kind of guidelines to get started on the process of sharing their story.
Well, we really do appreciate both Jim and Matt's time, and especially Wounded Warrior Project and yours. Rob has some questions for some veterans who could not join us live for this roundtable on the writing process. So I'm going to just let you fire away at the masters here.
Okay. So the first one actually is from Yolanda Pillard. She's a Army veteran who has served in Afghanistan and Iraq, and she wanted to join us. She's dealing with some power issues because of a storm in Louisiana. So she is not able to get in, but she was kind of wanting to know a little more about the process and kind of steps you could take to kind of prompt your writing, I guess.
I'd have to defer that one to Mr. Patterson.
I just asked me again. I stupidly was making a note to myself there. So I
it's okay, James. So she's asking about the process and kind of steps you can take to help prompt your writing.
A big piece of it is if you want to do this, man, you're going to do it. Honestly, if you're going to write, it all depends on what you're going to do. If you're going to, write short stuff that you can share with your friends and whatever, that you don't. But if you're hoping to get published, you have to be the sort of person that's like, I can't help myself. I got to write this stuff. I just have to do it. Process, as I said earlier, for me, it's that, what's the idea that I have some idea. I have something I'm going to write about, which it could be my kids. It could be my family. It could be a mystery. It could be, I wrote a podcast for Audible recently, called Zero Tolerance. And the idea was these three women who are anointed to go military bases where there's a problem with abuse of women, okay. which is a big problem. And they're going to go in and try to be fair minded about it. But there's been abuse. There's been something serious. And that's an interesting area. OK, it's rich. They're not necessarily going to be welcome with open arms in all places. You run into, is this just going to be he said, she said, or is there something that really happened there, et cetera, et cetera. So there's an idea. Okay. Maybe I can do something with that. And then who are these three women and what's their background? Why are they interesting? So, and then it comes down to, okay, that thing about writing the outline, where's it going to start? You know, so that one, it starts with them arriving on this base out in Nevada. I forget exactly where it is at this point. And they're not exactly welcome. It's not, you know, ridiculous, but you know, the base, you know, mostly people think we can solve this locally.
Yeah.
We don't need, and that's fair and reasonable. And but not necessarily always true. So that's the beginning. So if I was writing an outline, I'm going to start with a couple of chapters about that. How does that feel? And you try to be, you know, even handed about it. And then what's going to happen? What's the case?
Yeah.
And it happens to be two or three young guys, and they're kind of assholes. And so they're interesting. and so we're following them, and we don't know whether the one guy is guilty or not, but we're not liking them so far, but that doesn't mean anything. Yeah. And then you kind of go from there. Where does it go, and what are the twists and turns, and are we going to have a trial in this thing, or you know, what are the possibilities? But a lot of it is that I, when I'm doing the outlines, I'll just sit there and just do these one line bullets. Just what I just said. They arrive and they're having some problems. They have some problems with some you know lower ups, and then when they're dealing with the brass on the base, they continue to have problems. And then we're going to do a couple of chapters. We're going to meet. These guys who have had they may or may not have done something, and then she's going to interview a couple of women, or they're going to interview a couple of women on the base, whatever the hell. But we just start putting down just like that simple, okay. And eventually you decide, okay, well, there's the making of a book. I mean, knew it was a pretty strong idea, and zero tolerance is that's the basic approach that the Army is taking, at least at the top. We're not going to have any tolerance for this, which doesn't mean witch hunts, but it means, you know, if there's real shit, we're not going to sandpaper it.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so when this opportunity came up, we had more than two dozen veterans interested in taking part, and just the timing didn't work.
Yeah.
So just kind of curious from your perspective, and Matt's also, is as you're developing this outline, is it, what am I starting with? What am I ending with? And then character development, or is character development just kind of interweaved in every step you work?
It depends. A lot of times, like with Zero Tolerance, I would say the character development happened as I was writing. In terms of who these people were, I have a book coming out later in the month. Mike Lupica is a sports writer.
Yep.
Really good sports writer. And we work together and we become really good friends. And we have a book. The original title was Jane Effing Smith. And the publisher said, no effing way. Yeah. Walmart won't take that. But that started with the character. And we wrote a couple of pages on this character, and we felt ultimately it was the best character we ever created. And I created Alex Cross, and he does the Robert Parker, blanking on the character, big character. Anyway, but so we'd done some big characters before, but we wrote a couple of pages on her, and just she had been among us. She had been started out as a New York City cop briefly. Went to law school. While she was going to law school, she was an investigator. So she's been through that. She did it all. Now she's a defense attorney, and she's got this terrible case on Long Island, really complicated and interesting and messed up. And she'd been a hockey player at Boston College, so she'd really taken her knocks. And what you find out, it's an interesting thing for three books, because the first, it's now called 12 Months to Live. Next year, 8 months to live. The year after that, 4 months to live. You find out, she finds out about in the third chapter that she's going to die. She's got terminal cancer, but she's not going to go gentle into the good night.
Yeah.
And she's a hockey player, and, you know, screw it, man. I'm not going down easy. And yeah, look, we all have that disease, tragically, and you know, some of us say we're not going down easy. You knock us down, we're going to get up, and that's the way she is, and that was part of the way her character is revealed in the story. So in that case, it was a lot of thinking about the character before sitting down and laying out kind of what her story is going to be.
Okay, yeah, and. Since she played hockey, and one of the challenges today's generation of wounded veteran faces is traumatic brain injury, have you considered weaving that into?
Well, the book is written now, so it's too late to weave.
Okay. Okay.
but that's a good thought. Yeah. Look, I mean, and Matt and I, we talked about it a lot. We were, before you came on, we were talking about the nurse's book.
Yeah, yeah,
and what they go through, and just the fact that it's day after day after day. I don't know how they go to work. It's incredible, and that's another one where you read that book, and you go, "Oh yeah, nurses. Oh no. You have no idea what they do. I don't know how they do it. It's just an unbelievable job." And I guess, you know, it does get into an interesting area, and I think this is useful also for this discussion. And Matt and I talk about this quite a lot. Which is, you know, for a lot of the men and women in combat, they go out and they have a purpose. And their purpose is they want to survive and they want the people around them to survive. That's a real purpose. Now, there may be a bigger purpose as well in terms of believing in we got to stop the Taliban or whatever the hell. But there's purpose. And then a lot of times people come back and it's like, I don't have purpose anymore. You know, so for some people, the writing can become part of that purpose. I'm going to tell my story, and I'm going to tell it. And maybe I'm going to tell it for my family. Maybe I'm going to tell it for my friends. Maybe I'm going to tell it for a much larger audience. Maybe I'm going to go and I'm going to self-publish it on Amazon or something. But I got. So it's a little piece of the purpose, and that's useful. Or sometimes people just get the story. I got to get it out. I got to get it out because it being inside is really hurting me. I got to get it out.
And yeah, for Wounded Warrior Project, that is one of the things that we admire so much is the purpose that they have given to, you know, the mission continues on for those who wore the uniform and have taken it off, that maybe they're not the ones who are suffering from physical or mental issues, but they can go and they can help their fellow veterans. Rob, do we have any other questions from our other group of veterans? Or
no, I think that was it. Yeah, well, I think James and Matt did a great job touching on a lot of different topics and gave these veterans a lot to think about as they try and determine not just how to tell their story in terms of start to finish, but also in what type of format.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rob, we appreciate the work that Wounded Warrior does. And
you know, one little, just a quick thing on that. I always say this. I'm not selling this. I have a master class on master. I don't care what anybody goes, but I'd go for a couple of hours on what I do. Okay. But one of the things that as a writer, I'm not getting into my private life, boring. Part of it is, and I talk about there, I don't give advice. I just tell people what I do. And some of it might be helpful and some of it won't. So I'm not giving anybody advice here. Other than consider writing stories rather than because that's a lot easier. Yeah.
Well, consider it a non-paid commercial for someone who has bought Jim's masterclass along with, you know, it was you, Steve Martin, and Chris Voss, former FBI negotiator. It's worth the price of admission if you want to get Jim's masterclass as well. But Matt, you have any closing thoughts, or where can people find information on you and what you're working on outside of your time with Jim?
Well, I do have to say this out loud, even though it's going to sound incredibly cheesy, but you know, I said at the beginning, you know, I have a front seat at the masterclass, you know, working with Jim. But Rob, you know, to you and to Sergio, I would say, you know, one of the things I've learned and, you know, kind of condense this all into a little package. When I read Jim Patterson's other nonfiction books, you know, whether it was about Princess Diana, Lenin, the Kennedys, you know, these are stories that we know the ending. Like you said, nonfiction, you can't change the ending, but they read absolutely like fiction. And, you know, I've used that example to people, you know, on the side when they're like, hey, you know, what's it like working with Jim? And I tell them and they're like, oh, I could do that. And I'm like, well, no, you can't. It's a special breed. But, you know, but comma is, I think in theory, you know, if you're looking for a cheap way just to sort of get the ball rolling, look at one of Jim's, and it doesn't have to be one of the ones that he and I did together, but look at one, like, pick the John Lennon book and read it, and you'll see, you know, the art of storytelling. That's the best I got to close out this radio show, but it's a simple one, and I think soldiers would get it, Rob. You know, just look, and you know, it's a little bit of monkey see, monkey do, but I think it brings on the point of kind of everything Jim said today.
And Rob, one other thing about that is if somebody goes, I can do that, that is a great start.
Yeah.
I can do that. That's big.
Yeah. We try to tell everyone, everyone's a storyteller. It's just in what way are you telling that story, whether you're standing up in front of a room and talking, whether you're talking one-on-one, writing it down, sending an email. There's a million ways to tell a story, but everyone has one.
I believe that.
And Wounded Warrior Project has been at the leading edge of if you can't tell your story with words on a page, maybe you tell it in watercolors, maybe you tell it in welding, maybe you tell it in, you know, any, you know, community service, those sorts of things. So Mr. Patterson, Mr. Eversman, Rob, thank you very much. You guys have been incredibly generous with your time, and we will talk to you on down the road.